Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Atlantic Bushcraft Adventures. Tonight, we are on episode 225, and we're going to be talking a little bit about developing a safety plan for you and your loved ones. And this was actually your idea there, Ben, so why don't you walk us through it, good sir?
Yeah. Basically, my thought was, what are your contingency plans? How do you make sure that everyone knows what's going on, how to react if things happen? How do you let people know? What are your plans? What are your backups? How do you make sure they're comfortable with that? And it may be as simple for some people as leaving your destination in a location that everyone knows where you're going. So you can post it on social media. Hey, everybody, I am going to. And if you don't hear from me by X amount of time, please send help.
I mean, that is one way to do it.
Or it could be, I think we lost Robert. He fell right out the
screen. I'm here. Just slowly moving things around. For everybody out there listening, I am a little groggy tonight, but I'm going to try my best.
But yeah, I mean, the big thing is, you know, when you're going out there, you're going out by yourself, especially if you're going out by yourself or just even small groups. There are people at home that are worried about you. They are concerned. So how do we prepare for that?
Okay, and the tagline on that that I really liked and what I'd like to touch on, and Ben's going to disappear here for a second because I want to say it word for word, but basically how to make your family and friends comfortable with your hobby, which actually is something that I have had multiple people ask me about in the past. Like, how do you convince XYZ, you know, your significant other, your friends, family, whatever, that running around in the woods is perfectly okay? Because they're like, oh man, there's bears, there's storms, a tree could fall down and take you out. And the reality is, yeah, okay, I guess it could, but at the same time, I could wake up and walk outside tomorrow, get in my car, and you know, that could go bad too. So so I like that part of it as well. And well, Danny's joining us tonight from Red Sand Adventures. How you doing there, Danny? Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, Ben.
I was waiting for him to respond.
Oh. He's in the comments.
I was going to say, so, like, the other weekend I did take off. I took my motorcycle and I went in the woods and I did some exploring. But it was just a day trip. And I got back, I posted about it. And one of the questions someone asked me was, did you go by yourself? Now, you know, I do for some of this stuff now, you know, been going by myself. I do oftentimes reach out to people I know or I've met that I think are into that and see, is anyone interested in joining me? Is anyone else looking to do something like this? Because if there is, and I can combine with someone else, I'd much prefer it. It's my preference to go into woods with someone else. Because if something does go wrong, there's someone there to help me right away. And when you do go by yourself, I think you take fewer risks. There are roads that I want it to go further down, but I'm like, by myself, if something goes wrong, I really would struggle to get back out of there. Or, you know, I just didn't know if it was worth my risk. And you can, you know, if you get a bike stuck by yourself, it's a lot of work to get it out sometimes, right? So I just didn't want to push it beyond what I knew I could comfortably get back out of. But that was one of the things. Like, one of the things I took this particular time was, and we had an episode this year on it, was the InReach Mini. And I wanted to test it. How does it work? How can it, you know, can I send a message to family, like a check-in and stuff? And does that add to their comfort level? And I think items like that, there's plenty out there. There's the Zelos, there's the SpotX, there's the InReach. I think there's one ACR stick. There's a few other devices, but there are options out there. These are options that will use the satellites that are in the air to send a message telling your loved ones you're okay, and that might give them some peace of mind. And that's, you know, that's something that's really only existed in the recent few years. Before that, I mean, cell phones argumentatively had better range a few years ago. And as such, you had the old analogs. Like, you could really reach with those, right?
I was going to say, I have noticed that myself. My old flip phone, like, yeah, my old Samsung A920. Everybody's going to hear me mention that at some point, because that was like the epitome of a phone for me. And my technology level, I guess. Like, it was a basic flip phone. It had basic texting. Even had a fancy little screen on the front, but that thing got cell service everywhere.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, once they switched to fully digital, I know there was advantages, and but one of them was definitely not better range. Shit.
That's not good. But yeah, no, better, definitely not better range. You got a lot more technology in it. That was the big switch to digital. And you can use that to your advantage. So that is a great method, providing you have coverage, that you can communicate with people. Like, you can make a phone call. You can send a decent picture message. You can send a video chat if you have enough, once again, reception to do so. Like, they're an amazing tool. And coming back to that point about how to convince or, you know, make the rest of your family okay with what you do, it's a great way of checking in. Like you said, with the Spot and the Garmin Mini, these are all ways of being able to check in. If you have a lifeline or a method of, if you need me, emergency situation, because I think with the Mini 2 or the Mini 1, whichever one there, they can send you a message as well, can they not?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So they can be like, are you alive? And even though it costs a couple cents, and we looked at the cost here after last week's show, just you and I off air, it's like 15 cents a message. 15 cents, yeah. Peace of mind. If you're only sending maybe three or four a day, and you can get plans that have more included and yada, yada, yada. But yeah. Say you had to pay for them.
I think I get 10 in my plan. And everyone you receive is one. Everyone you send is one. But there are some of the other methods had more messages you could send, but the prices varied. The one I went with worked for me. It may not be the one for you. There was reasons I went with mine. There's reasons people go with other ones. The reality is most of them get pretty good coverage over most places. Some of them just had a little bit more delay between when you send and actually you'll get to the other end. I wanted the one that had in my opinion, or from my research, was better. Will the other ones improve? I strongly think so. And one thing is, like, some of the new iPhones, and I don't really like the iPhones, so don't get me, don't think people are going to ever say, Bill, Ben suggested them. But the newer ones do have an SOS system that will reach into, I think it's Globestar, and it's an adequate system. So it's a method, right? So even some cell phones now have. And Motorola is coming out with the Defy system, and I think that uses the same network or a similar network.
On the iPhone thing, funny enough, new job, new phone, who dis, right? Work contracted with iPhone. So I now have an iPhone as a work phone, and it does have the SOS feature on it. I haven't looked at it yet at all because it's a work phone. I don't accidentally want to get in because I know very little about Apple products. I have been on record as saying I just don't own Apple products. Not because I hate them, just because it's not for me. But anyway, I am interested to see if they'll let me play with it a little bit. But something that's coming up in the comments here, for those of you that are listening, and for you as well, Ben, you may be interested in this. Danny's talking about a story over on the island. Apparently, a couple weeks ago, a fellow from PEI took a camping kayaking trip to a small island offshore, didn't return. Apparently, he had told people where he was going when he was planning to return. Says the local news, sad story. Will that work if you don't have a connection? Oh, okay. So he's asking about the Mini 1 there. Will that work if you don't have a connection? So the beauty about the Mini 1, Mini 2 or the Garmin.
InReach system in Garmin. So there's other GPS units that have the same system in it. The InReach system uses Iridium network. And so does the Zelos, I think. And yes, they will work almost 100% of the globe.
Yeah, they're satellite connected, so it's real hard not to have reception. There are dead spots. I mean, you make a better mousetrap, you get smarter mice, right? But we're talking like very, very few dead spots, and it's usually terrain related. If you get in deep valleys where you're kind of closed in saddles, things like that, and you have bad view of the sky is where you're going to start hitting these dead zones. You may have light zones depending on the amount of satellites that are going overhead, but generally for a text message, you're not needing to connect to all the satellites. It's a pretty small data packet. So as long as you can ping off one or two of them, generally you're going to be able to get out your location data as well as your text message. Now with this fella over in PEI, I haven't seen the news myself. This is the first of me hearing about it. I would be interested to see if he had something like this with him, or if it was nothing more than word of mouth, which, don't get me wrong, word of mouth is great. In this instance, unfortunately, this fellow did not return home, but at least they had an idea of when he should have been home, and then they could start sending out the search parties. You know what I mean? So, I once again, Danny, I haven't heard any about this. Have they recovered a body, or is he still just missing in action kind of deal? And it'll take a moment for that to go through and him to respond back.
Yeah, no, these methods work. Another method that can work is different types of radios. There are certain radios with really good range that are still somewhat portable, and you can use them to contact authorities. And oftentimes you can pick up on someone else. So maybe a truck driver or somebody else who's using a similar type radio can pick up your signal. Having a communication device is generally better than not having a communication device. The other options are certain types of sat phones. There are devices out there that can extend yourself, your cell phone in some ways that this InReach is, because I can actually, using my phone, as long as it's hooked up Bluetooth, I can send text through that, through the Mini. It still costs me the same. So those are some neat things that the three included messages as I'm starting, I'm okay, and I'm returning are canned and free. I can send those all day long. And a method that I thought I would talk a bit about that is, should you decide you're so cheap that you are really worried about the 50 cents for a text, you could actually tell people that the meaning of those for you is different. So you're never going to say maybe that you're ending your trip. So maybe you can tell someone, if you ever get that message, things aren't looking good and you may need to come look for me. Maybe it's a prep one, like, you know, if you want to give someone a cautionary one. But if you're really in trouble, definitely hit the SOS button, because believe it or not, those are free. And if they contact you, you have the ability to convey information to them, as well as send actual coordinates as part of the send. So that's a pretty big thing of that. Because here's the thing, when you get lost, it might mean you didn't go where you said you were going to go. There's been more than one case of this, but there's one on the Appalachian Trail. I think we've talked about it here before, where she actually just went slightly off the trail and never found her way back to the trail. And they found her like years later, her body and her setup. A device like this, had she had that and hit SOS, they could have told her the trail is 3 kilometers to the south. And she would have known how to get there.
Yeah, and that's the beauty of these satellite things. Like, they give not only the text message that you can send out being like, yeah, I'm good or I'm not good. They give you the coordinates as to where that person is. If you hit the SOS button, and I don't think you have to hit the SOS button. Every time you send a message out, it piggybacks the coordinates on there if you hook it up to the mapping software, I believe.
So, yeah, mine has MapShare. I'm sure the other ones have similar systems. But yeah, you can put in online to whether to share coordinates when you send or not. And I think it just makes sense too for me. So I've included that, and there's another piece of information that's a part of it. That's just part of when I send now. So I send a message and automatically it adds these extra pieces of information. And one thing I noticed when I was testing it is, in between the mountains in a bit of a valley, it came back that I didn't have good satellite signal. So my coordinate range was quite large, which meant the accuracy was down. But I would much rather see them be within a few hundred feet of me than a few hundred kilometers. And take the guy on the boat, a good current or a good breeze, he could be quite a ways away from the island he intended to go, especially if he passed out or something happened. And before he got to the island, he just drifted.
Sorry, if you see me nodding up and down, I'm looking at some of the texts that Danny's saying here on the right, as well as reading the story about that lost feller that was over there in PEI. And if I have the right one there, Danny, is that the 71-year-old that went fishing? But yeah, these satellite devices have come so far from back in the day. And I don't mean like in the 70s and 80s, because that's obviously they're way far away, but I mean even as far back as like the early 2000s to early 2010s, satellite really kind of started catching on then. You got a lot of sat phones, seeing them in TV, stuff like that. Cost was really high. But that's when they started kind of hitting the public market. And I mean, roughly. I'm not giving the exact dates here, but roughly. But now they're actually relatively affordable, considering what you're getting, because a sat phone used to set you back like $1,000 to $2,000. I don't know what a sat phone costs now, but I mean, one of these spot devices, they set you back a couple hundred bucks and then just a monthly fee.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the sat phones are, you know, voice transmission stuff still costs a lot more, but, you know, it can save your life. So, you know, I'm not pushing one or the other. Definitely do your research and choose one that works for you. But if you're going to go out, and especially areas where cell phone coverage is much worse. So I found Nova Scotia was much better for cell phone coverage than BC. So it seemed like every time I left the beaten track, I lost cell phone signal. Most times I did that in Nova Scotia, I still had it. I might have to hit the next hill or something, but it was back there. So that was something I noticed. This, make sure that whatever method you have is kind of relevant for the area you're in. And I did read that there are places using these satellite devices is actually illegal. I think India, Pakistan, there's a few other countries. Yeah, they do not want you to use it at all. So if you use it, use it at own risk, because when you hit call, maybe help will come, but maybe you get arrested when they do. I don't know.
But I mean, even at that, if you're in dire situation, like desperate need, I'd take the risk. You know what I mean? Life over limb. You kind of got to weigh those options. But I mean, once again, these satellite options are just one method that you can use to try and plan a safe trip. Or to make more people when you're comfortable going out there. What's Danny saying here? Popular on people. Okay, so the story, what I'm getting from Danny here is buddy went out boating, and it sounds like he capsized. So let's talk about this story a little bit, Ben, if you're game, because it's kind of impromptu here. Do you know anything about this story, or are you kind of like me? This is the first you're hearing off it. So fresh. What I'm gathering from Danny, he went out boating, capsized, unfortunately, you know, expired to the elements. He was found by a fisherman later on. So when you're going out boating, that does add another complication or another level of danger to your trip as you're going out. But there are things you can do that will help better secure you. And I'm not trying to say in this specific instance that if this feller had have done these things, it would have saved him. But these are things that you can do on your own trips that may potentially help you out. And the first thing that I thought about when Danny was talking about him going out in open water was I was curious if he had outriggers on whatever little boat he has, because it sounds like he went out in a canoe. And once again, I looked online there. I couldn't find, the only story I found was a 71-year-old fella that was found. Apparently this is only a young fella, and his boat capsized. But anyway, outriggers. If you're going into open water in any way, shape, or form, and you don't have a buddy, and honestly, if you're going boating, it is one of those times, like having a buddy go with you is probably your best safety line. Water can be very gorgeous and freeing. It can also be very unforgiving and cruel. You know what I mean? And having a backup buddy, maybe not even in your boat, but in their own boat, or even in your boat and wearing your personal flotation devices and stuff like that. Once again, I don't know the circumstances behind this story, but these are all things, at least with water safety, that you can talk about. We have done an episode on water safety in the past. If anybody really wants to get a little more information on that, go back into the podcast and check it out. But just for the sake of this one, definitely personal flotation devices. Telling people where he was going was a great step, but, and I say but very hesitantly here, the other option would have been to see if somebody could go with him. And then you have an extra set of hands and an extra set of eyes. The other side of that is if things still went bad, you may also have two recoveries. And I understand that point too. But with more hands, more eyes, better chances is generally what the rule of thumb is. And this isn't just for water safety. This is when you're hiking, you're camping, any of that stuff. It's just you can spread the workload and you can spread the safety concerns. So if something happens to one person, you have that backup method to potentially help you get found or out of that dangerous situation. If the young fella had a spot device or a Garmin device or something like that, I think you can set those up to auto ping, can't you? So often they automatically post a pin up on the mapping software. Like, I don't own one of these, folks. I am relying solely on Ben's information on this one.
Yeah, so I researched on all of them. There is differences in each of them. That one of the things I liked about this one is you could set up tracking. So it will automatically send if I request it to. You have to turn it on every five. If you pay for the expedition package every 2 minutes or every 5 minutes or every 10 minutes, I think you can set up different time frames. And so, yeah, that's an important potential thing, because like you said, if you become unconscious, it would be really good to know, you know, what options you have. And so one of the things I would tell my wife, if I'm going for any length of time, if you don't hear from me between these time frames, know that I may be in trouble. Or if I haven't moved in 8 hours, know that I may be in trouble. And I mean, that's a long time. But even then, you know, giving them the times you plan on traveling. So if you say I'm traveling between 8 and 4 every day, and 12 o'clock you haven't moved in 2 hours, they might want to, you know, send a message. You still don't respond, and it keeps showing to the same location. A few things might happen. One, you lost your device, right?
I mean, the potential's there. It is a piece of gear.
But the other is that you're no longer able to move or able to communicate, and getting that help to you might save your life. I mean, it may just be a recovery. That is always a possibility. But yeah, those devices give that. You mentioned a couple other things. I think we should really go personal protective gear on boats, life jackets. If you're in rougher water, potentially a helmet. If you're doing motorcycles, ATVs, or anything like that, wear your helmet, wear your protective gear. That'll mean a lot to your family. Make sure that if they know when you go, you always wear the right gear, then they know what to expect from you. And that's going to give them some comfort. Because if they see you not wearing the gear, just going here to there, and they're going to, well, when they're back there, are they wearing the helmet? Are they wearing the gloves? Are they wearing the jacket? Are they wearing the stuff that could protect them? And it makes a big difference. Like, you crash a motorcycle without gear. I mean, I can't speak to it as much, but you can, Robert. You've been to motorcycle accidents.
I have had motorcycle accidents. Right. And everybody's like, oh, I was wearing my jeans. Reality is, folks, jeans are good for about 15 feet of sliding at 50 kilometers an hour. You increase the speed, you shorten the distance. Keep that in mind, too. And that depends on your weight, and that's on asphalt. So, yeah. I mean, depending on the surface you go down on, like, jeans is the bare minimum. They are not the epitome of safety. They are the bare minimum. They are better than shorts. And that's pretty much it.
And I mean, you see people driving down the highway. This irks me. In shorts, in bikinis, topless. Not the women. I haven't seen that as much. But men, I've seen men no shirts, shorts, flip flops on. This, and a half helmet.
I was going to say, the worst thing I see going down the road is somebody in a tank top, shorts, and flip-flops. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, that's not even considered safety gear at that point. To me, that is, you are trying not to get an indecent exposure or exposing yourself fine. That's it.
You might as well be naked.
Pretty much. Because that is going to offer zero protection.
There's actually a pretty cool video running around that shows how long, like, a pair of tennis shoes last. And it's like basically impact, they're starting to fail instantly. Within like 0.3 seconds, the toes are hitting ground.
I was going to say, it's not much. You need something, a sturdy set of footwear that covers the ankle bone. And you may say, Robert, why cover the ankle bone? Keep in mind, your ankle bone protrudes out further than the rest of your leg generally in that area. And if you go down and the bike happens to pin that part down, guess what gets ground off flat first? And I've seen this, and it is not nice.
Basically, all the pokey bits are what gets ground away quickly.
And pokey bits are like fingers, palms, elbows, knees, ankle bones, feet.
Shoulders, like, spine.
Yeah, literally. But anyway, safety gear, 100%. Depending, no matter what you're doing, if you're going in the woods, wear good footwear. Don't go in with a pair of flip-flops and sneakers. You have no ankle protection. You have no real protection against your feet going over sharp objects, getting tied up in tree roots. Even going through thick brush, you're going to find that your legs and stuff are going to get tore to hell. So a good pair of footwear, some sort of sturdy pant. And once again, I'll leave that to you. What you want to decide is a sturdy pant. You're only going to know based on the area you're going into. What do I consider sturdy pants for walking in a field is not going to be the same thing as I consider sturdy pants for walking through brambles and bushes. You know what I mean?
Obviously appropriate gear for the task you're doing. Never hurts to have things like safety glasses. If you're walking through a lot of brush, if you're doing anything that's going to kick dirt and stuff up. If you're just, believe it or not, like a good pair of safety glasses or sunglasses, if you're fishing, it's easy to hook yourself with a hook. You're doing a lot of carving. Maybe carry a pair of cut resistant gloves.
Yeah. Right? And you can get some nice cut resistant gloves now. I've actually ended up getting myself one after cutting myself a few times.
I think I bought a pair at the dollar store, believe it or not. It works.
No,
it's okay. But something that can help, right? Over and above that, other safety gear, not necessarily gear that you wear, but the gear your gear should be wearing. The mask on your axe, the sheath for your knife. If you have a saw that folds up, fold it up when you're traveling. Don't leave it in the open position. It only takes a second to set up most saws, but it only takes a second while walking along to hit your leg and all of a sudden you're bleeding. And now, you know, once you have an accident, the risk of other accidents go up. It goes up exponentially in my mind.
Oh, for sure. It is a snowball effect. A blister. One of my old coworkers, Dan. We're just going to leave it as Dan. I'm not going to include the last name. He sent me a little thing for all for the sake of a nail. And it was basically like, if it wasn't for the sake of a nail, a horse would have shoes. If it was for the sake of the horse not having shoes, there'd be a commander on it. Anyway, it expands out and out and out and out. And basically, all for the sake of a nail, a war was lost. This is kind of getting injured in the woods. Yeah, it's grandiose, I get that. But literally a blister, now you're going to start walking, like a blister on your foot. You're going to start putting pressure on your other foot. You're going to start exerting that side. Maybe you roll that ankle. Now you got a rolled ankle plus a blistered foot. You're going to start trying to balance the two injuries out. Completely unstable. Now you fall. You put your hand down. Maybe you end up like me. You slice your wrist. Maybe you don't get as lucky as me and you hit something real important. You know what I mean? All for the sake of proper footwear. Now you're stuck in the woods, potentially with a life-threatening injury.
Well, that's it, right? Like, and once you're injured, you start thinking about the injury and not about other things so that you're distracted. Your mind isn't where it needs to be. Someone once, or I seen this today or this week anyways, someone said, if you're riding a bike, and they were talking about motorcycles, but this could be bicycles, it could be canoes, it could be anything, and you're worried about getting injured, you probably shouldn't be on there. And what they're getting at is that if you're actually so concerned about being injured while doing it or getting in an accident or getting this, then you're not fully thinking about what you're doing and your mind's not in the right place. And it means that your risk of injuring yourself or others in the process goes up. So you have to get yourself in the right headspace.
Oh, 100%. I mean, go take your driver's test, be it motorcycle, car, truck, doesn't matter. The first thing they tell you is you don't drive if you're not in the right headspace. You're not focusing on the task at hand. That goes for going into the woods. If you're not focusing on the task at hand, you're potentially creating a liability for yourself. So, proper headspace, proper planning, notifying people, packing your bag the correct way. It's going to alleviate a lot of the load in the wrong places on your spine, chafing your shoulders, things like that. If you're constantly trying to shift your pack while you're walking, believe it or not, that can lead to problems too. You know what I mean? Like, a little pre-planning goes a long way with this. And if you show that you are doing these things, people will start to have confidence in your confidence, if that makes any kind of sense. If you're confident about going into the woods, The first time that Mel came out with me a few times like that, she was a little nervous. You know what I mean? She had never gone into the woods as deep as I had drug her into the woods. She had never really done a whole lot of camping other than with, you know, friends, family, things like that. And it was camping, not woods exploring or bushcrafting, whatever you want to call it. But it was always one of those things. Like, it wasn't just, oh, come on, I'll show you. It was, all right, well, that's cool. I get that you have some concerns, but let's start at the ground. Here's the gear we're going to need. Here's how you pack that gear in to make yourself comfortable. Here's the things I think you should be wearing because this is the trip we're going to do. It was the confidence and the forethought on that that kind of gave her confidence and got her thinking about things as well. Like, oh, okay, if I'm going to be wearing long boots, should I tuck my pant legs into my socks to keep ticks from coming up? Because I had mentioned ticks and, you know, it shows confidence and it shows a little bit of planning. And there's an actual word I'm looking for here, and I can't grasp it for the life of me. But anyway, it does. It shows confidence, and your confidence will come through. But at the same time, don't be foolishly confident.
Don't be cocky. Yeah, there's a
don't
big difference.
Don't be cocky.
There's a big difference between confidence and cocky. And sometimes it's hard to tell. But I always say, if you can back it up, you're confident. If you're bluffing, you're cocky. And some people bluff it until they make it, and that's a dangerous mindset.
Yeah.
That's why we tell people to test your gear, test your equipment, test your knowledge before you go out, because it's the wrong time to figure it out after you're gone.
And Ben and I hark on safety so much on this channel, and I didn't mean to cut you off, Ben, but perfect lead into this one here. I've been back pocketing what you said here, Danny, looking for a right intro into it. Perfect place. Danny, a fellow once told me, he doesn't go by the safety first saying. His saying is safety always. Said that to me about 15 years ago, and I try my best to live by it ever since. And that's right. It's not safety first. It's safety always. Like, it's not that you're prioritizing safety. Safety should be in all your thoughts with anything you do. Like, there is risk to everything you do. I can hear the people now saying, oh, you could walk outside and get hit by a meteorite. Yeah, you could, but the chances are like the same as winning the lottery. But everything you do outside of walking outside of your house is increasing your risks for stuff. And you have to weigh the risk, cost, benefit. You know what I mean? You're going into the woods. Going into the woods is more risky than going through a field. You know what I mean? There is more factors out of your control. But if you can plan for those and mediate the risks, and that's the thing, it's risk mediation.
Well, okay, let's go with the meteor thing. Honestly, walking out of your house doesn't make you any more risk of getting hit with a meteor. It can go through your house like butter.
If it's coming from space, bud, house ain't going to save you.
Right? But someone said you could be walking down a sidewalk and get hit by a bus. But if you're watching and seeing what's going on and you watch the bus leave the road, you have a chance to get it out of the way. Being aware of your surroundings, taking into account what's happening, and making the right decisions can minimize risks. Can you get rid of every risk? Absolutely not. But you can minimize most of them. And when you minimize the risks, the likelihood of them happening go down way more, and you start to see things.
And that's it. Mediating risk, acceptable risk, and don't take needless risks. So, Andrew, I'm sorry, bud. If I butcher this, I apologize. But Andrew Kovganka? I hope I said that, man. If I didn't, I apologize. But I took a try. Anyway, it's cliche, but safety is no accident. We have a couple other people chiming in here, so I figured I'd throw their stuff in. Nomadic Hacker joining us again. Safety should be a lifestyle, not an activity you do. It's all part of being prepared. And that's kind of what Ben and I hark on this channel, is we're always like, you know, think about safety, test your gear. And I know some people are like, oh, you guys, all you ever say is test your gear, go in the backwoods. Do you guys ever get into the woods? Yes, we get into the woods, but we never go into the woods with things we don't know. You know what I mean? It's risk mitigation. I'm not going into the woods with a tent I have never set up. Melissa and I bought a brand new tent to go camping with, and we were going to a camping park. I still hauled that sucker out of the bag, and we set it up in the lawn. One, so we're not getting to a new location trying to set this sucker up and figure it out. And two, I wanted to make sure that it was going to suit the needs for where we were going. You know what I mean? And there wasn't a hole in it, or there wasn't sharp pointy bits or a broken bit that could hurt us. Like, it's all part of the bigger picture.
Yeah, for sure, 100%. The other thing I want to talk about, and I want to kind of hit some of these, training. You can get a lot of training for this stuff. If you're into boating, there is training. So, you know, you have all the gear, fine. Like, a lot of it is, you know, say for boating or motorcycling, they give you the law of what you need to carry. That is the minimum, by the way, that you should be carrying, not the maximum. But also get the training to use a lot of this gear. Make sure that you're using the gear correctly and properly. But also, like, if you take a first aid kit, maybe have a first aid course so you know how to properly deal with some of this stuff. It could be you, your banding Jeff, or your best friend, or a loved one. So knowing how to use that gear is going to give your family a lot more comfort, knowing that not only do you know how to use the gear, you have training in it. You have training in how to be in the woods, how to navigate. Anytime you get the opportunity to do training on the stuff you love, take those opportunities and never stop learning. It doesn't have to be formal training, but it does need to happen.
And this is where I was just going with that. The first time I went into the woods, it wasn't by myself. I went in with my father and grandfather and learned a lot of stuff from them. Then I started going in with friends and we learned a lot of stuff from each other. Then I met up with people like Ben over here and we went into the woods and I learned stuff from him and hopefully he learned a thing or two from me. He's probably going to nod and say, oh yeah, sure I did, but I bet you he's lying. But anyway, you can learn from your peers, you can learn from your families, anybody that has some experience and knowledge, if you can tap into that, that stuff is free and light as hell to carry around with you for the rest of your life. You know what I mean? Takes no weight, sits up here. And then once you get it, practice it a little. Because there's numbers here, and I'm going to butcher these numbers, but it's like you remember 10% of what somebody tells you, you remember 50% of what you tell somebody else, and you remember 80% of something you try yourself, and like 90% of what you teach somebody else. And once again, the numbers are a little jaded. I'm trying to pull them from memory, and my memory is shot at the best of times. But there is a factor in there to all these things. And you can look it up online. I'm just too lazy to do it right now. But there is a correlation between what you tell other people and what you teach other people versus what you hear, what you see, and what you try.
Yep. So, yeah. So what have we covered so far? And I know there's some more stuff that we can potentially talk about. Communication, and that's a few things, but like ability to send communications when you're in there, but doing good communication before you leave, leaving a safety plan, leaving directions of where you expect to be and when you expect to be out. We've often talked about that. There's even sites, I think we talked about before, that you can use. I can't remember the type of it, but there are methods that you can use. Look up for your area. Let somebody know where you're going. Let them know when you're returning. That is important stuff, right?
Check-in processes. If you're in an area where you have cell phone service, give a call every now and then. Let people know where you're at. If you have, I noticed my iPhone now has this share location feature. You know what I mean? If you, maybe it's only between iPhones. Don't know. But anyway, maybe you can do that. It's been a couple times I've been in the woods, and I know on my phone, my actual Android phone, my personal phone, there is, you know, a share my location thing through Google Maps, and I'll share that with Melissa, being like, I'm not 100% sure where I am right now. I kind of know where I am, but here, I'm sending it to you. If at some point I'm like, dude, I'm lost, start here.
Well, me and my wife, we have our shared location turned on both of our devices, so if we're wondering, are they on the way home or what's on the go, we can quickly check and kind of get an idea where we're to. But that's really important if you're in the woods and you have cell service. It'll give you at least the last known position, right? Which is a big advantage to search and rescue team, because I've been a search and rescue team, and that's what we're looking for. What was the last known position? And then from there, we look for, you know, we try to move that position, right? You got your last point last seen and point last known. Those are potentially two totally different things, right? You might have last been seen at a store. The last place we know you were to is where your car is, and we see your car there, right?
So, or that could be the GPS signal or something like that. You know what I mean? Something that can be confirmed. That's kind of what I was thinking with that story we were talking about from the young fellow from PEI. If he had one of those Garmin devices or something like that, and he knew he was getting in trouble. If he had hit that SOS button, one, they know he's in danger now, and two, they would have a very accurate start locate, or, you know, more accurate than what they had, start location to start looking for him. Would it have changed the outcome? Maybe? I don't know. And if it had that auto-tracking thing, even if he had a passed out or expired or something like that, they would still be able to basically pinpoint right to him if they had got there fast enough, is their chance for resuscitation. I mean, you can kind of go with what-ifs all day, but the reality is they would have got to him sooner.
I mean, I heard a story a little while ago. It's a young lady that was up in this neck of the woods. She went for a camping trip or a hiking trip, never came out of it. Search and rescue went looking for her. Her family had moved up here, I think, from the States and have continued the search. This is years later. Like, they're pretty sure she's gone, but they still want closure, right? So even if, you know, these devices don't lead to them finding you alive, it still gives closure to your family. So that's an important thing to keep in mind. Like, people love you and they want to know where you're to, and they want to know if you're safe, or and if you're not, they need to know that. That closure is extremely important to a lot of people. And so taking the few minutes it takes to make sure that they have the ability to find you is extremely important.
I mean, it's a morbid subject, but seeing we're on it, I'll give a little story. And I think you might have been a part of this at the time, Ben. We just didn't know it. Down here in Pictou County, there was a young fella. He was only 19, went missing around the Mount Tom area before Christmas. Last known whereabouts was him and his friends were out in a cabin. They got into a small argument. It wasn't anything major, but alcohol was involved. He went for a walk to clear his head and just never was found again. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And this was like 3 weeks later at this point. We were still searching for this fella. And I know search and rescue was involved, and that's why I wasn't sure if you were involved or not, Ben. I mean, it was pretty confirmed that it was either A, an abduction, which seemed very unlikely given the circumstances, or B, we were looking for a retrieval, you know what I mean? And the problem is, the on-nice thing about this is, the entire time, the parents were like, there's a chance, you know what I mean? And that eats at you in the weirdest and worst kind of ways you can possibly imagine. And trust me, you don't want that for your family, because holding on hope against hope more often than not does more harm than good, if that makes any kind of sense. There is lots of stories out there where people have been found years later, hit their head, amnesia, stuff like that. There are the odd times, but more often than not, unfortunately, it doesn't come out that way. And that eats at people in ways that I never understood until this actually went down and I had the opportunity, because it wasn't an opportunity, it was an unfortunate circumstance, of dealing with the retrieval as well as dealing with the family in the in-between. It's not good, guys, honestly.
Likewise, I've seen similar things. When you're on a search for somebody, there is high emotions and there's a lot going on. And one of the things is you have family members there, you have reporters there, everyone wants to share something with somebody. And so one of the things we are always told is, unless you know something 100% absolutely true, don't say anything at all. And also, once you know something, feed that to the appropriate authorities so they can dole it out in the right way. And so people would sometimes get mad at us because they felt like we knew something, we weren't sharing it. And it's that we know what we don't know is much greater than what we may know. And so what we think we know oftentimes is exactly that, is a gut feeling. Mm-hmm. And if we start sharing that, it can really upset people. So we try to keep that.
And that's just it. We try to keep it to the facts. To finish the story off, we did find the young fella. Unfortunately, he had expired. It was one of those instances. He succumbed to cold weather. And we actually found him with a lot of his clothes removed, which is common for freezing victims, if anybody's not familiar with that, but that's another topic anyway. In any case, we informed the authorities came, they did their investigation, and the family was a little annoyed that they weren't informed first. The reality is, the authorities have to get there and do their thing, you know what I mean? And that's even more time, as where if you had like one of these devices that could pinpoint you, it takes a lot of that out of the the work. I don't want to say too much on this because I know the people and it's still a local story and I don't want to feed into any of that. But there's a lot of stories like this out there. You know what I mean? So, yeah. Something Nomadic Hacker here said was, even basic tools for signaling or knowing ways to signal and knowing what rescuers will be looking for are other things you can do. And we've talked about this in past episodes as well. You can flag lines. You can bring signaling devices like an orange drum liner. Amazing thing to have. If you just carry in your pack, takes up no room, takes up very little weight. You can cut that sucker open and make a huge signaling device. And once again, if you go back to that episode, Ben had a lot of great topics there from a search and rescuer's point of view on how you may be able to do a little self-rescuing where you start at a location, you walk out in directions and come back. You can leave self-signaling devices. Like if you're heading in a direction because you think that's the way you should be going, for whatever reason, you know, staying put is not an option. And we talk about that in that episode. You can leave arrows. You can leave flagging tape. You can leave a note. Like, you know what I mean? There is a lot of stuff you can do for to help your self-rescue. Knowing the rule of threes. Things don't happen in threes in nature. You know what I mean? Three piles of rocks, three fires, three whistle blows, three shots of a gun. That's generally meaning you want somebody to find you. You know what I mean? And everybody's like, oh, you're going to hear three gunshots in hunting season. It's very rare you hear three timed out shots in hunting season. You might hear two, you know, the shot to try and hit the animal and the one to dispatch it. But it's very odd you hear three and not evenly spaced out. You know what I mean? Symmetry and things that happen evenly generally don't happen in nature.
I think that's the big thing too. Like, yeah, you might hear three shots. Someone might miss the first one, hit him, and then put them down, but usually there's a huge break between at least two of those. If they're hunting birds, you're probably going to hear like five or six. Like, you know, if they're so,
but they're cluster shots, it's not evenly spaced out. Same as if you're blowing a whistle, and a lot of people are like, oh, how do you know if it's just a kid playing with a whistle or somebody lost? Once again, time your blasts evenly and the same length. Don't be like toot. And then a long toot, and then a toot. Like, you know what I mean? Three long toots evenly spaced out is going to be better than just blowing a whistle randomly. But the other thing about a whistle is it saves your voice. Once again, we talked about it in that previous episode, so I'm not going to harp on that a lot. We highly recommend you go back and listen to that. So, what have we covered now, Ben? We covered, where did you leave off before I butted in and...
Communication systems, which we were still kind of in, into wearing the, you know, proper gear and equipment. Trying to keep this all straight. training. Is there something between communication systems and gear?
Between communication systems and gear. I honestly don't remember. We talked about PPE.
Yeah.
That kind of fell into gear, but the proper gear for where you're going. Wear your protective gear. Once again, don't go for a mountain hike and flip-flops. Can you do it? Yeah. Is it going to be a fun time? Probably not. You know what I mean?
But yeah, I mean, what we're talking about overall is you want your family to believe that you're the best prepared as possible. So, you know, having escape plans, telling them what your plans are. So communicating your plans, having the proper gear, having the proper training, having communication systems set up, having a way to get out. So if you're in there and you can't get out, having a plan of somebody who's going to come look for you or someone who's going to inform someone to come looking for you, that's an important step. So once they know you have all these things set up, they're much more comfortable because honestly, it's much more like you're just going to the mall and not going in the woods for a couple of days because they know you're well prepared. Because yes, like you said earlier, you could go out your door and something could happen. But the thing is, when you go out to the door and you go to the mall, people expect you back in 2 or 3 hours. So if they don't hear from you in 2 or 3 hours, they'll start looking for you right then. But you're going camping, you're going out for 2 or 3 days. So if they don't see you in 2 or 3 days and they don't hear from you, that's not unexpected. These other methods help help them understand when they should hear from you, how they should hear from you, and what you're going to do if you can't meet your objectives.
And one little thing that we didn't talk about, and I won't dwell on it too much because it's kind of self-explanatory, don't bite off more than you can chew. If you're new to camping, you don't have a lot of experience, don't go out on a two-week adventure. You know what I mean? You may want to, but start small. It's kind of like working out or trying a diet. If you want to relate it into something, you know, more lifestyle oriented, you don't go to the gym and work out for 8 hours your first time. Gonna be a bad experience. You know what I mean? You're probably not going to enjoy it either. You go and you warm up to it. And as your skills develop and your muscles develop and stuff like that, you build into bigger and bigger things until maybe you get to that 8 hour workout. And I'm grabbing ridiculous numbers here, but you know what I mean? For your first time out, don't go for a 2 week adventure. Maybe you just go for an overnight just in the woods behind your house. If stuff hits the fan, your escape route is, this sucked, I'm going home. You know what I mean? Or camp close to your car. Set up your shelter and stuff. If it goes to hell, and we've seen this when the lake flooded. And I say that laughingly because it didn't flood. But anyway, I retreated to the car. You know what I mean? I had a backup plan. That was my escape. If I had been in the middle of nowhere, the reality was I was going to spend the night wet. You know what I mean? So,
yeah.
Well, don't bite off more than you can chew.
I went this weekend. I took all the gear to spend a night with the whole plan of not to spend a night. The reason I did that was I wanted to know that my gear was adequate for what I was planning on doing and that I could travel with this, my moment of transportation. If you're hiking and you don't know if you're going to be able to do a long hike with that gear, do a short hike. Go to a local park and just walk around the park with the gear on just to see, is this pack working? Is that weight too much? Because if you've started a trip, you're going to feel like you have to finish it.
No, for sure. And that's the thing. Be realistic about your capabilities, too. Like, everybody likes to think they're a superstar. We're all guilty of it. I don't care who you are. Be realistic. Take an an unbiased look at yourself, which is really hard to do. You may want to weigh in on somebody else as well. And go from there.
Yeah.
So gear, I think we've covered quite a bit here. I know we've jumped down rabbit holes, much as our philosophy here at Atlantic Bushcraft Adventures. We just kind of talk about what seems to make sense. We did have a couple people join us here tonight. Once again, we had Andrew, Danny. That's how I got Andy. It was Andrew and Danny thrown together. Sorry, folks. So we had Danny, Andrew, Nomadic Hacker. I think that's it. Did somebody else jump in there at one point? Nope, just the three of the folks there. And they gave us some of their interpretations too. So if you're listening to the podcast for the first time, you're a longtime listener and you want to join in on this, by all means, Wednesday nights, jump on. If you say something in the comments, we try to bring it up in some way, shape, or form, at least just to acknowledge you're there. We appreciate you folks. We give this information to you guys, honestly. So we like to see us. That's all I want to say on that one. But yeah,
we're here to share and as much learn ourselves, honestly. But yeah, those are some things that I think me and you both do to make our loved ones feel more comfortable with us going out there. You know, oftentimes by ourselves or in small groups, and we want them to know we're coming back and safe. We don't want them fretting the entire time we're gone. Because the reality is, if your family is fretting the entire time you're gone, you're not going to go as often. So you're doing this for everyone's sake. Your sake, their sake. Everyone's going to feel much better about you doing this if you've taken the time to make sure they all know that you have a plan and you're going to use it.
Yeah. And that's just it. Yeah, I think that's a good place to end it there, Ben. Anything I say is going to be a repeat, so I am trying to stop myself from doing that as much. Once again, thank you to everybody that joined us here tonight. If you want to join on, every new Wednesday night starting at 9 Atlantic Daylight Savings Time right now. Yeah. So roughly an hour previous to what this is right now, but that doesn't help the people that are listening there. Anyway, yeah. Anything else you want to close off with there, Ben?
No, my standards, you know, get out there, have fun, be safe, and let us know how it goes.
And I couldn't agree more. We'll catch you next week, folks. Same time, same place. Night, everybody.